Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to First Bite, our Pride of Detroit midweek Detroit Lions podcast. I bet you thought you weren't getting one this week, but we're fitting one in here late, recording on a Friday night. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the editor-in-chief of Pride of Detroit. You can find me at Detroit Online on Twitter. With me co-hosting First Bite, as always, Ryan Matthews, senior editor of Pride of Detroit at Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, how are we doing on a Friday night?
I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling really good because of who we have on the show tonight, because yeah. it's gonna do everything that everybody needs to hear as a primer for what's coming up, for where you're going, buddy.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to be talking some Senior Bowl in the back half of this segment. But yes, we do have a very special guest who has taken umbrage with the fact that I still call him a special guest, considering he's coming up on his 1 year anniversary at a website called Pride of Detroit. Managing editor of Pride of Detroit, Eric Schlitt, is with us at Eric Schlitt on Twitter. Eric, buddy, welcome back.
Yeah, you know, four more weeks and then it'll be a year, and then maybe we did a podcast during the summer. Like I feel like we were close to moving past that special guest title.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see how today goes. Maybe we'll just call. What do we call you if you're not a special guest here? You can't be. Are you a co-host?
No, I can't be a co-host because I'm not a regular.
That's what I'm saying.
Rare appearance.
But here's what we'll say. You are going to be a more regular appear on the podcast feed soon, I would imagine. We've been talking behind the scenes about bringing back our Q&A show, which we did all off season. Maybe moving to Twitter Spaces. We'll get into that maybe at the end of the podcast and have a more formal announcement later. But let's get into this week's topic, which is the NFL draft and the Senior Bowl. Like I said, we'll get into the Senior Bowl second segment here, but I want to talk about the draft because I think we've tired ourselves out on the Kayvon Thibodeau versus Aiden Hutchinson talk. So we have now moved over to some Kyle Hamilton talk at number two. You put out a fantastic article again on that website called Pride of Detroit. And I want to get into, I want you to kind of summarize your argument that you put out there. And then I kind of want to open it up to Ryan and myself and have maybe a little debate on it, because there's been people that have been banging the drum for Kyle Hamilton really since the college football season began. Yeah. And he does seem like a special prospect, but is he a number two special prospect? Tell me about the article you wrote.
Yeah, basically I don't think there's any doubting his talent, and that has not been really contested, I guess, this offseason. We've seen him play. I'm sure people have seen the highlights. He's a very talented player. His body type is rare. His speed is rare. His intelligence is rare. Range. I mean, there's so many things that are really exceptional about him as a player that he's drawn this attention that he could potentially be in consideration for the top spots. And what I wrote the article on was that whenever I would bring up positional value, and that the league doesn't value safeties at the same level that they value quarterbacks, left tackles, and edge rushers. There people were very dismissive of that. They didn't want to accept it. They didn't want to talk about it. And so I said, you know what, I'm just going to try and summarize as best I can why the league views things the way that they do. And I talked about hit rate, like how successful players are at their position when they're drafted at certain spots. For example, I took articles from NFL.com, ESPN, PFF, and I did PFF grades as well. And I made a collection of like 19 different players that were made these different lists. And what you will notice is amongst those 19, The majority of them were first rounders, and not just first rounders, but like top half of the first round type of players for edge rushers. Edge rushers, typically the higher you draft them, the more successful they are, or the higher the chances of success that they are. Finding a guy like Max Crosby in the fourth round is really rare. Finding a guy like Romeo Okwara undrafted is extraordinarily rare, right? And most of the time, the top edge rushers are always guys that you find going in the top half of the first round, or at least the first round in general. Whereas at safety, it's completely different. When you talk about what where the best safeties drafted in the league, you'll find in them all over the place, typically in the top 100, but the majority of them are not taken in the first round. Only a handful of them that are taken in the first round typically tend to pan out. And historically, when you look back at like over the last 21 years, since 2000, there have been 28 safeties taken in the first round, yet only like 10 of them have made an all-pro, and only like five of them have made more than one all-pro. So the hit rate that you're going to find a safety that's going to be successful by taking them early in the first round, it's hard. It's hard to find those guys. You can typically find them all over the place. So right off the bat, the value is, okay, you find more success taking edge rushers early, but then there's the financial impact as well. Edge rushers typically make more money than safety, so you're ending up having to pay them more. And then when you look at the rookie cap and what you're going to be paying a player, you're going to pay him about $7.5 million. So do you want to spend that $7.5 million on an edge rusher where you're going to get good value for your financial investment, or are you going to spend it on a safety where the safety is going to have to go above and beyond what he would normally be expected to do just to meet those financial expectations? And so there's a lot more pressure on that safety. Now, these are all the reasons why the league tends to favor the edge rusher over the safety. But then you have to take into consideration, is Kyle Hamilton a unicorn? You know what I mean? Like, if he is, then there's some you can justify taking him early, right? It's Ryan and I talked about this on Twitter earlier. Kyle Pitts was a unicorn. That's why he was a tight end taken at the spot that he was. Well, I mean, did he go? I forgot what he went four. For, right? Yeah, right. So you don't take tight ends that early. I mean, remember when they drafted Hockenson?
Right.
The Lions fans got super mad that they took Hockenson at eight. Right now you took Pitts at four and nobody blinked an eye because Pitts was a unicorn, right? And you find those unicorns in the draft, right? And that's part of it. So Kyle Hamilton, he very much has a chance to be a unicorn, but is he? And if he is, how high are you going to take him? There hasn't been a safety picked in the top three in 30 years, yeah. Right? Last one was 1991. Bill Belichick took a safety at two.
He knew what he was doing.
It was Bill Belichick of the Browns, right? It was that Bill Belichick,
yeah.
Right?
Bill Belichick before he was Bill Belichick.
Yes, right. So like it, historically, the data says teams are going to pick the edge, and you're going to have more you're going to have a better chance of success finding those edge guys than you would finding a safety, but you can't rule out the unicorn.
Well, let me throw it to you, Ryan. I don't know how deep your Kyle Hamilton research has gone, but do you feel confident that maybe Kyle Hamilton is that unicorn? But because I mean, you look at the kind of draft analysts, and you don't see a lot of people pointing any flaws in his game right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much like who I know Kyle Hamilton to be as a prospect, which is, you know, rather limited. I mean, I know like some of the PFF grades and some of the accolades and the statistics that he's put up and how highly everybody talks about him. I don't know if it's more so my lack of an understanding of where where Hamilton fits in, but like where the Lions fit in sitting at number two in a draft where there like is no consensus, like top five players, right? Like, you know, with all that uncertainty, it's like, well, you know, you can take a lot of the data that Eric has put forth and say, you know, there is a premium on edge rushers, teams value them. Therefore, you know, there's a couple of top ones in this draft. That's where the Lions should probably invest their second overall pick. And add to it, it's a position of need. But I hear the you know, as you said, I think they're a very vocal group, the people who are, you know, really on board with Kyle Hamilton at number two for the Lions. And they say, well, yeah, safety's a big need too. And safety's a really important position, so much so that we were talking about, you know, heading into this offseason, once Brad Holmes was nailed down, hey, John Johnson III might be a shoe-in to come over to Detroit and play, you know, a very important position in you know, the defense that they were planning on running. And the Lions are desperate for playmakers at both positions. I tend to kind of side with, you know, where Eric's, you know, historical data lies in the edge rushers are the position. And if you just think about the Lions over the past, how long, like how often does Chris on the podcast, Jeremy, talk about, screw it, I don't care, we've been here before, I've seen this movie before, it's an edge rusher, take an edge rusher. Yeah. And we've been saying this for so long and so long. And the last one was Ezekiel Ansah, and that felt like a huge reach. It doesn't feel like one of these guys that is going to fall into the Lions' lap is that kind of reach where it's like a high ceiling guy. You know what I mean? In the sense that, like, they also have a very low floor.
Right.
It seems like you're going to get a bona fide contributor, and I think that that's so important in an offense or in a defense.
Yeah, and to me, this is where I'll push back just a little bit. To me, it's all about confidence in your pick panning out right here, because this is a pick that the Lions can't afford to blow. Like, they can't get a guy who's just okay. They can't just get a you know, a middle tier starter. They need an elite guy. And listen, like, I think most people agree that Hutchinson and Thibodeau aren't necessarily your top tier guys. Maybe not everyone thinks that, but like, you see a lot of people saying like, none of these guys are a Bosa, none of these guys are, you know, an elite. None of these guys would be a number one pick in, you know, previous drafts. And Kyle Hamilton, I mean, listen, again, I'm still pretty limited in my research on him, but the consensus seems to be he's kind of a can't miss pick. And listen, we've all covered drafts long enough to know that a can't miss prospect can certainly miss. We it happens. But I guess to me, if the Lions get an elite player at a defensive position, it's going to be hard for me to complain. And so if Brad Holmes goes up in draft day, he boldly puts in Kyle Hamilton in at number two, I'm not going to freak out, because I do think there's a pretty good chance they hit on that draft pick. And yes, it's not going to be at the most impactful position. Yes, it's not going to be the most cost-effective move. But if he pans out and he's pretty darn good, like, we had this question in our mailbag, Eric, like, it's always, like, everyone's always kind of looking over their shoulder in the draft. Like, and you know, even with Penei Sewell, right? Like, everyone, you look at a guy like Micah Parsons and you say, oh, did the Lions make a mistake? Well, no, they got an elite player. That's fine. So if they get an elite player in Kyle Hamilton, then I'm going to be okay with that. Even if, you know, one of the top two edge rushers turns out to have a pretty darn good career too. And to cap off that point, the one thing I'll say is it does feel like this fan base is kind of in a place where they don't want to reach on a position right now. And it's understandably so. Like, the last couple of times they've done it, it's bitten them. You know, Jeff Okuda, whether his career pans out or not, it was a cornerback taken third overall. And that, just the value there was criticized in the moment. Eric Ebron, even Hockenson to a degree, I think maybe has not quite lived up to expectation at eight. So there are people that are just like, this is what has screwed this franchise in the past. They haven't gotten a blue chip player out of those top tier picks before. So I don't want to see them try to do it again with Kyle Hamilton. When to me, it's more about the person and not necessarily the strategy.
A couple points I want to make. When I wrote this article, I wrote it trying to just focus on the concept of, who should you, what do teams value? Yeah. Right. I didn't try and focus it too much on what I think the Lions value. But when we look at what the Lions value and where they've invested capital on the defensive line and the offensive line, right? They've looked at safety, and everyone thinks safety is a weakness. And they looked at safety and went, actually, we're good. We think we're pretty good. We like Will Harris a lot more than everyone else does. And that's scary to fans, but anyway, they might be looking at this saying, yeah, Kyle Hamilton's great. We got a couple good safeties, and if we upgrade Marlowe's spot, we'll be all right. We'll be all right at safety. Like, they might look at this and say, we have so many questions about all of our edge rushers, and there are two really good edge rushers sitting there, and we like Will Harris a lot more than, you know, like, we think the drop off between Hamilton and Harris is, you know, a smaller gap than Hutchinson or Thibodeau and, you know, the next Charles Harris, right? Like, so, and then you look at the fact that Brad Holmes has historically hit on defensive backs late time and time and time again. Yeah. And when he was in LA, he got safeties late quite a bit. And then look at the, look what he did with the, he got two undrafted corners. Like, just let me grab these guys and, oh, look, they're both starters now. Right. Like he, so the, when you look at what they do, what he's done historically, and when you look at where, what the moves that they've made, I think Hamilton is going to be a lot less valuable to this franchise than one of the edge rushers.
Fair enough. I think we'll close out the Kyle Hamilton debate there. Let's move to their other top, 35 picks. Obviously they got whatever the Rams pick will be, probably 27 or lower or higher, 27, 28 or higher. And then obviously, like, I think people forget, like, they're just around the corner there after that with 34. That's locked in. Eric, I want you to go over maybe, I think wide receiver tends to be a popular pick there. If you could go over some names, not necessarily wide receivers, just guys that you think the Lions might be interested that'll be available around that spot right there.
What's tricky is, like most of the positions in this draft, is that there's not really like a consensus, right? Yeah. There's not a, this is the guy, and then there's a whole bunch of guys after. A lot of this draft is going to be teams picking the player that fits the need that they want. Right. Because there's about six receivers that are all going to be kind of grouped together. And if you want a big guy, there's going to be one of those. If you want a fast guy, there's going to be one of those. And so it's going to kind of be pick and choose. I don't think there's going to be any consensus on who's where. So trying to project if like a guy like Jameson Williams, the Alabama receiver who tore his ACL in the national championship, he's probably going to be there at one of those two spots. And arguably he could be the best receiver in this draft. Right. And if he's ready to go, which is debatable, like he'd be ready to go for the season. But if you're taking him at 34, like you get the best receiver in the draft at 34, because he's probably going to miss the first half of the season. Well, that's great value. Right. So, but if you're talking about guys that are purely healthy, I've seen Chris Olave there, which I don't think is going to happen. I think he's going to be much higher. I've seen Drake London, Amon-Ra St. Brown's wide receiver partner at USC, right? Like, and so there's going to be one of the, it kind of looks like one of those six guys is going to fall. Like there, at least one or maybe even two of them might be there at 28. One of them might be there at 34. And then, so there's going to be a couple of receivers. Dotson from Penn State's another one, and Treylon Burks from Arkansas. Those are kind of like the top guys. When you get into that second tier, you're talking about David Bell from Purdue, Michi from Alabama, and then one guy that we'll talk about at the Senior Bowl, Jalen Tolbert from South Alabama. I think he's going to be a guy that starts in that conversation in the second round.
Just as a quick aside, Eric, as a curiosity, it really does seem like that first round, every mock draft I see is just littered with wide receivers. And I know that's becoming more and more the case in each and every draft, but do you feel like this draft especially, I mean, there's a surplus of wide receiver talent and teams are always in need. So there's going to be a lot that go in the first round.
Yeah, I think that it's the way the college football is trending. Yeah, I think it lends itself to that, where you're finding more and more talented receivers because they're getting trained to play in these more spread systems, and they're adapting faster, they're growing faster, and so you're finding more talented players in the NFL, more talented wide receivers in the NFL because they're getting trained more in college. You see the opposite effect on the offensive line. Right. Offensive line isn't getting trained as much, and they're struggling, and it takes time for them to develop in the NFL. But in receivers, that's the show, right? Like that's even more than running back.
I was going to say, isn't it so funny how that narrative has changed so recently? Because it was forever, it was like, hey, receivers, you need to give them like at least a year before they make an impact. I'm on Amon-Ra St. Brown, man.
Right. Yeah, the key here with this class as well is that none of them are like, this is an X, this is a Z. They're all like, hey, he spends half his time at the X and half his time in the slot. This guy spends equal time amongst all three spots. That is the trend of these receivers now. We see it with St. Brown. St. Brown is he plays three quarters in the slot, and he plays 25% on the outside, right? And that's what you're seeing with these others. So when you get these guys now from these different spread systems, and this class is really going to accentuate that, is that you're going to have these hybrid players that you're going to interchange out of different spots, and you're going to line them up all over the field, and they're going to fit right in with St. Brown because he has that flexibility to adapt as well.
Just a team full of Debo Samuels.
Dude, San Fran has that blueprint, right?
Yes.
I mean, honestly, like I was watching San Fran's offense and I was thinking, this is what the Lions want to accomplish. Right. You've got your tight end. You've got a Deebo Samuel kind of esque guy in St. Brown. And there's going to be another, if they take another one high, that's going to be your other guy. Like they have a chance to kind of replicate what we see in San Fran and a heavy offensive line that likes to run. And you've got good slot options and guys that can do multiple roles. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like they're trying to do.
I don't think wide receivers running the football is something that's just like in vogue right now. Like, I think that that's something that like
could be a thing
utilized. Yeah. It could be a thing.
Yeah. Last thing before we take a break and then head to Senior Bowl talk. It feels like the quarterback talk has really, really died down in Detroit. Like whether it's because of Jared Goff's the way he finished the season, whether it's because people seem to think that they're just going to, you know, kind of kick the can down the road to 2023. Not a lot of people have talked about quarterback, especially with that second pick or 34. But I'm curious as to your thoughts. I've shared my thoughts before on going quarterback late in the first, but I'm curious as to where you land there.
Yeah, I think Goff's resurgence in the back half definitely tempered that need for a quarterback. Having this class not be as exceptional also kind of softens that need as well. So I don't think it's a need, really, honestly. Like, I think if there's an opportunity where you have a guy that shouldn't be there that is at one of those spots and you think the value is there to take a guy, I understand it. I don't think it's something they have to do. I don't think it's something they're going to feel obligated to do. And personally, I wouldn't even prefer it just because there's upside in a couple of these quarterbacks, but there's not like there's some of these guys are – they need more work than Trey Lance did last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, it's going to take some time. Like we all like Willis, right? And Willis has got some work to do in order to be ready. Like, you could put him on the field and you can run some packages for him. But he's not a guy that's going to step on to the field and challenge next year. Maybe he could challenge a year after, but you've got to work on different, things with him. Same thing with Ritter. I'm not a Howell fan. I'm not a strong guy because I don't think I want a statue back there. I want somebody with a little bit more mobility, and I don't think the other two are going to be there. I don't think Corral or Pickett are going to be available at either of those two spots. And if they are, then that's great value, I think, with those two guys. So I've leaned away from it more, and what you were able to get out of Goff, I think, really shows what you can do. And even if it's just towing the line while you build the roster, I think that's more viable than I thought it was, geez, in the first half of the season.
Yeah. No question about it.
Can I ask you a question, Jeremy?
Sure.
So I know like you've been like on the record many times saying that, you know, if the Lions have their guy at quarterback, they should take him. Like, they shouldn't play the weight game. Yep. Yeah. They shouldn't, you know, trade down picks or anything like that. Or they certainly shouldn't wait to see if he's around for the Rams pick. But like, if that guy is not at like, if it isn't your guy, but it's a really good value pick at the end of the first round, is that something that you invest in because you know that you could potentially flip that player for more assets, or he could eventually develop into your starter? Like, is the value right at the end of the first round? If it seems like, hey, like think of it akin to like the Justin Fields situation. I know that was higher in the draft, right? But like, everybody was like, somebody needs to take this guy at some point.
Right.
Like Lamar Jackson.
If their QB one is still there at 28, essentially, is what your question is or something.
Yes. But he's down there. He's down their board because he's not their number one prospect.
I don't think the timing's right to make a move like that. Like, I wouldn't be completely upset, but you're not in a position where you should be taking guys that are going to, you know, develop 2-3 years down the line. Like, you need, like Eric said, you need to build this roster first. You need to get these slam dunk picks. You can't waste a year on a rookie contract, I don't think, right now, just because of where you're at everywhere else on the roster.
You would undoubtedly have to do it in the first round, and the second round, it makes even less sense, right?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think these first three picks are critical to this team's development, like absolutely crucial. because this is why you traded Matthew Stafford, right? Like you to get these extra picks, to get these high picks, to know that you're probably weren't going to play very good football in 2021 and get a high draft pick because of it. You can't mess it up. You can't kick the can down the road. You can't waste a year or two of these rookie contract deals. And I know in the past I've said order doesn't matter, but I think right now order does matter in terms of when you get your quarterback. And I think Jared Goff has shown enough where he's earned another year to prove himself and see if maybe he could be. I still think at this point he's probably just your bridge. But if he gets a full year and gets better, you know, support on defense, better wide receiving core, who knows where it goes. So let's play that out first and not kind of play the, all right, well, we're grooming your guy a couple of years down the road with one of our key picks here.
Goff is just has just enough personality to where if you draft his replacement, he might completely fold.
You think
like,
so?
Yeah, I kind of do. I hate to say that, but it seems like the vibe that I get from him is I don't think he would produce the way he produced at the end of last season, next season, if he's looking over his shoulder. I think he plays a lot more confident if it's a Tim Boyle behind him than Malik Willis.
Yeah. It's kind of, that's a tough thing to nail down, obviously. Cause I mean, he took it on the chin pretty hard this year and was fine, but it's kind of a different taking it on the chin when, I mean, the Lions gave him all the support he could possibly give. And that was important. So yeah. What happens when that kind of falls out a little bit? It's a good thing to at least think about,
especially amongst to Eric's point, especially amongst a group of coaches who is so about competition and the best player getting the playing time.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if you're anywhere on this roster, if somebody behind you is, you know, making an impact, that's going to cut into your playing time.
No question. Shockingly, we went over on the first segment. So when we come back, we're going to maybe have an abridged version of a little Senior Bowl preview, but don't worry. We're going to be talking lots of Senior Bowl in the upcoming week. So stick with us on First Bite. We will be right back with Eric Schlitt.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And we are back here on First Bite with our buddy Eric Schlitt, managing editor of Pride of Detroit. Let's talk Senior Bowl. And Eric, you need to give me a crash course on the Senior Bowl roster because I am making the trip down to Mobile. It is now official. Yeah. I made reservations, all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, you can't make it. So you are going to be my Sherpa along the way, both virtually and right here in person-ish. So let's start on offense. At this point, the entire Senior Bowl roster, I believe, has been revealed.
Correct.
Offense was first, though. So Tell me four guys, and it's the American team, right? I could probably get that down first. The Lions are coaching the American team. Yeah. Tell me about four guys on the offensive side of the ball that you are very excited to see for that week.
Here's the trick. There's going to be a couple guys at each spot that they're going to want to be like looking at, right? Yeah. The quarterbacks are, of course, going to be the talk because you've got two potential first-round quarterbacks and then another potential day three backup. But like, that's not really where I think my focus would be. And I don't think that's probably where you're going to want to invest a lot of time, especially after what we just talked about in the last segment, right? Yeah. With the whole quarterback situations. But you're probably going to want to look at the skill spots, right? The one that stands out to me the most is there is the tight end and then like the fullback, right? You've got a couple of guys on there, like they're going to need another tight end. And then they're potentially be looking at a tight end kind of, or fullback hybrid H-back in there as well. And I think that's something that they were targeting with Josh Hill last year. It's something they kind of turned Kabinda into, but you know, as much as they like Kabinda, maybe it doesn't come back. So you have two on this roster that are interesting. The first one is Connor Haywood, right? The Michigan State fullback. He's a fullback hybrid, H-back hybrid. He's a little on the shorter side. He's like 6 foot, 230 something pounds like that, but former running back. So he's got some of that Jason Kabinda background in him, but he can do a lot of those things kind of like that you were looking for Josh Hill to do. The other one is Daniel Bellinger. Now, Bellinger is more like a tight end. He's like 6'6", 250. But again, he has that kind of skill set that lends him to being like an H-back as well. So those two guys fill a unique role where they can play multiple spots. And depending on what happens with Kabinda, it could be a very important role. When you look at when Kabinda wasn't out, how that drastically changed what they were able to do in the offense, that game that he left early, third to last game, right? It's an important spot for what they want to achieve. And they have two guys. And I think that was very purposeful. You don't really have that on the Jets. The Jets weren't looking for this type of guy. The Lions were, those two guys were probably handpicked. And so those are the first two that I would be keeping an eye on. And then the other two on offense would be a couple of receivers. I mentioned Tolbert at the top. He's probably going to be the highest rated receiver on the Lions All-American team. He's big, he's powerful. I know Kent is a big fan of his. He has some vertical ability, and he's a guy that would come in and he could potentially complement what the Lions have. But if anyone's going to challenge him for to go number one out of this wide receiver group, it could be Calvin Austin. Now, Austin is a little bit on the smaller side. Well, a lot on the smaller side. He's only about 5'9", 162 or 65 pounds or something like that. So he's small, but he's bigger than Tutu Atwell, who like 20 pounds heavier than Tutu. And Tutu went to the Rams last year in the second round. Like, so again, this is a guy that he's going to be primarily a slot guy, but when you talk about Amon-Ra's ability to play inside out, you can do the same thing with him. He brings a different skill set. He's kind of like a Khalif Raymond type of player, but smaller, but also quicker, which is a little bit scary to say because Khalif is awfully quick. But he's a gadget player that can do more like St. Brown type things as opposed to like what Raymond does. Like you can use him in the backfield, you can use him on screens and stuff like that. So those two receivers I would also keep an eye out for. There's some really talented offensive linemen in this game. But again, I think if you're focused on four guys, those are the four that you want to keep an eye on. The offensive linemen, the one thing I want to point out about them is that almost all of them are position flexible. Okay. And again, it's the opposite of the Jets. Jets went very guys that were very streamlined into the spots that they wanted. I think the Lions specifically picked the guys that they wanted or put in requests for the guys that they wanted because they wanted guys that were position flexible because I think they're looking for backups. I don't think they're looking for starters. And so that means there's a lot of these top guys, that top like unit, those top five guys that are all probably going in the top 100 picks. You can probably ignore them because I doubt they're going to take one of those guys unless they move on from Vitae, which means the other guys, who can jump out from them? Is there anyone that's going to step up and elevate their game a little bit more because they're going to want some of these position flexible guys? I wouldn't be surprised to see one of them.
But before we jump into the defensive side, I want to, you let off with a couple of tight ends and fullbacks. And I think a lot of people might be like, oh, why are we talking about fullbacks and tight ends?
Well, who's your head coach?
Who's your head coach? And Ryan, like, I know this is something you've been beating the drum already this offseason. Like, tight ends a pretty darn big need this offseason, right? And we talked about how Josh Hill was essential to the Saints offense. We've talked about that before. Was it Sean Payton who said, like, he's the front door to the offense? And it does feel like that's what they were building Jason Kubinda to be too, because like you said, Dan Campbell, after that game that Kubinda got injured, was like, we had to throw out half of our playbook. And you're like, what about with Kubinda? But I think, yeah, that they were trying to build him into something. And I think he's a guy that they'll probably end up bringing back, but who else you got?
Even if they bring him back, they could still take one of these two guys.
100%.
Because, right?
Is Brock Wright that dude?
Well, I think he's tight end three, right? Yeah. Like, I think like Bellinger. I know we're, as Michigan State, you know, fans in the state of Michigan, we like to support our in-state players, and Hayward's a great story being from Michigan State, and it'd be neat to keep him here. But he's almost like Jason Kubinda, right? And if you bring Kubinda back, it makes his window a little bit smaller. Bellinger, though, Bellinger could be your tight end too, and he can be your backup for this role. He can be a better version of like what Brock Wright is. And I think he's a really realistic chance of landing in Detroit.
What round would you circle for him?
It's hard to say. I want to see how they adapt him. Like, is he going to be the starter? If he is the starter down there, man, that means they're going to think highly of him. And you could start talking about maybe he's that third round pick, or one of the two third round picks. It's hard to say at this stage, because tight ends are really hard to pinpoint.
Yeah.
But I mean, he could work his way up into the top five. I could see that.
Yeah. And to be honest, you know, before, you know, learning a little bit more about Bellinger here from you, Eric, I think the big name that everybody kind of circled was Trey McBride on the other side of the ball for the Jets. Cause it seems like he seems to be a consensus, you know, top three tight end, even, you know, tight end number one amongst some draft Knicks. So, I mean, can you just talk a little bit about Trey McBride? Cause I think it's interesting. The Lions have their guys, they have their roster, but it's not like they're not going to have access to, you know, the other team. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, McBride is definitely up there. Like in my opinion, there's two kind of like tight ends at the top, and then everyone else is kind of trying to work up their way towards that. McBride's one of them. The Texas A&M guy, what's his name? Weidermeyer. Thank you. Yeah. Right. He's here's the thing though. These guys are, McBride's a little bit more balanced. But a lot of the tight ends in this class, they're all F tight ends, which is the guy who can sometimes line up in line, but most of the time they're lining up in a slot. And again, I think this goes back to our conversation earlier where we're talking about spread systems in college. And so many of these guys are like that. You're running into less guys that are, you know, less tight ends that are coming in and capable of blocking, or you're finding guys that are just blocking specialists. Finding those guys that can do a little bit of both is hard to come by. And I think that's why McBride gets a little bit of gets that attention, because he's more balanced than some of the other guys are.
All right, let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. Obviously the Lions have a lot more needs there. You know, I think you can localize the Lions problems on offense to those kind of perimeter guys. But you could pretty much go in any direction on defense. So again, I'm going to only ask for four here because we're limited on time. But who are the four guys, when I'm sure you could name 15 that you're going to be watching?
This one was harder, right? Because you don't know exactly which way they're going. Obviously, we've talked about the fact that safety is a big need, but they only have really three safeties, and I don't think any of them are going to be in the conversation in the first 100 picks, right? So it's going to be kind of hard to say. I think they're going to take an edge rusher early, which means the top edge rushers here, they're a little bit, you know, it's a little bit harder to like say, hey, is a Jermaine Johnson a guy that they would consider with that second pick in the first round? Now, Jermaine Johnson out of Florida State, he's one of their edge rushers. It's going to be a stand-up guy. He's long. He's going to be, I think he's going to probably start at the will for them. That's my guess. Opposite of him is Cameron Thomas, and he's more of like a like a Flowers type replacement where he can put his hand in the dirt, but he can also stand up and rush the edge. He's a little bit more position flexible. Again, I think those guys are guys that you watch because those are guys, that's a position that that's a need. Right. Yeah. And so, do I think they double dip in the first round? No, but if they go Hamilton early, these guys are going to be in the conversation at 28. So they have a couple of really good talented edge rushers. Linebackers, really interesting. I wanted to pick a guy out of the linebacker group, but again, I think there's more talented linebackers early. If I was to watch one guy, the guy I would pick from there is JoJo Damon from Nebraska. He's a coverage back. A lot of these guys are really good in coverage. And I think that's very purposeful.
Yep.
You know, they didn't pick some of the top linebackers went to the Jets side, and the Lions ended up getting like four linebackers that are all like day three guys, but they can all cover like crazy. And so, and JoJo is probably the one that can do it the most. Now, okay, I say that, and they have two Georgia linebackers, and we saw how fast those guys can just fly.
Yeah.
I mean, they can fly. Right. And so I'd love to put one of those guys. The sleeper is Clark from LSU. I think he could end up being the best of the bunch potentially down the road. I don't think he's quite there yet, but okay. But JoJo's my picket linebacker. And so then my last guy, at corner, McCreary is really the most talented corner. He's arguably the most talented defensive back in Mobile, right? Period. And so you don't know, just like on the edge, you don't know what's going to happen at corner. Are these guys going to return? Are you going to need another guy early? And then you have Amani going into his last year on the outside. And then, so there's a lot of questions. Now they got a lot of youth and they got a lot of depth, and they look, and if they return healthy, they don't need to add anybody, but you don't know if they're gonna, and if they're not, McCreary is a guy that I highlighted him in my draft watch list earlier in the year. And he's a guy that has continued to rise and rise and rise. He was a guy I thought was in the top 50. Now I think he's probably going to go maybe in the top 34. I said 34 for a reason.
I thought something that was interesting just looking at the rosters, Eric, but the Lions, the American team, they have three more defensive backs than the national team.
Yeah. I think that's purposeful. They went a little bit lighter in certain areas to go heavier in the back end. Again, what did Mahomes say in the presser? I think we need help on the perimeter, right? And so I wouldn't be surprised if one of these defensive backs, again, ends up with the Lions. Maybe even a couple if you start talking about undrafted guys as well, yeah. Because there are some guys that really fit the system that I haven't even talked about because, you know, I'm limited to four guys here, but, but there, I
mean, you already kind of broke the rule. Let's be honest.
I'm always looking for a little bit more, but look, there's probably six corners out of the nine that I could see them targeting on, anywhere from round one to undrafted, that all really fit the system really well. Key length. So when we start looking at the measurables at the first day of Senior Bowl, length is going to be a really big indicator because Glenn likes a lot of length on the corners.
Yeah, but could Aaron Glenn develop a UDFA? I don't know. We just don't have any evidence of that.
No, just a couple of guys that did all right.
All right, we're gonna do a little special thing here at the end here. During the regular season, we like to do a segment at the end called "One Thing We Think We Know." Again, recording this on a Friday night before the divisional round of the playoffs, so we're gonna have a special playoff edition of the One Thing We Think We Know about any of these games, anything that happens in this weekend games. I want you guys to give me one prediction about what happens this weekend. Ryan, are you ready?
I'm going to be bold.
Oh, okay. I love it. Ryan, what's the one thing you think you know about the divisional playoff weekend?
The one thing that I think I know about the divisional round of the NFL playoffs is that the Los Angeles Rams are going to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers by two scores.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm telling you right now, I think it's going to be ugly. Like, I think that what the Rams will be able to do up front in terms of their pass rush, I don't think Wirfs is going to play. And at this point, like, I watched what a pretty anemic Eagles pass rush did, at least on third down. Like, I think it was kind of like an undersold aspect of that game is when Wirfs went down, like, I mean, just randoms were getting pressures on Brady and they ended up sacking him four times. So I mean, change those randos with Aaron Donald and Von Miller and our old friend A'shaun Robinson. Hey, I think it could be a bloodbath.
Wow. That would be interesting. I mean, the Rams are also going to be missing their left tackle as well. Whitworth declared out today. But that'd be an interesting one. And not a lot of Lions fans would, I'd say about half would be happy with that result. half would very much not be happy with that result. Eric, I'm going to pass the buck to you next. What's all one right. thing you think you know about the divisional round of the playoffs?
The Bills will get their second win and they will not punt again.
Oh my God. Wow. This is just the boldest version of the one thing we think we know I've ever heard.
I think one, they're going to be super efficient, but two, they're going to have to try and keep up. And so fourth down and short, they're going. I think they're going. I don't think the Bills punt and I think they win. They don't punt and win.
I don't know about the punting thing. I love that aspect of it, but I'm right there with you, Eric. I think that the Bills get revenge. Yep. Yeah.
Dang. I mean, once again, proving never punting is the strat. Sorry, Jack Fox fans. I'm going to go. I think this is also kind of bold, but certainly not as bold as I think you guys said. And it's going to directly contradict what Ryan said. But I think the one thing I think I know about the divisional round is that every single game is going to be a one score game that's decided in the final 5 minutes of the game. I love all of these matches, but I think they're all fantastic. It'll kind of, you know, cleanse the palate after what I thought was a pretty not, I mean, we had one or two exciting games in the wild card round, but we kind of proved why some of those teams were two seeds and why some of them were seven seeds. So I think I'm expecting a very competitive, very entertaining week of football ahead.
What's the, before you know, take off your NFL hat that
my Rob Lowe that I
yeah your Rob Lowe NFL hat that you wear what's going to be the closest game?
Ooh,
you said they're all going to be one score games, but like what's going to be the closest game?
I think it might be that Chiefs Bills game, because I don't know who wins that game. I it's going to be very entertaining. I'm very happy they put that one in the last spot Sunday night, because that's going to be a pleasure to watch.
Kicked our podcast to Monday. That's how much we want to watch it.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is a good reminder. We will be doing a live podcast, full podcast show. This was essentially a full podcast too, but we'll be doing a full one Monday night, recapping maybe a little bit of the playoffs, talking obviously more Lions off season as well. So make sure you're subscribed to us on any channel. If you're subscribed to us on Spotify, make sure you give us a rating. They're allowed to do that now. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave a review. And maybe we'll read it out loud. But until next time, for Eric, for Ryan, thank you for joining us on First Bite. We will be back soon. And as always, it's chaos. Be kind.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.